Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Odyssey Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. That's Chris Biederman. He covers the 49ers, among other things, for the paper of record in the state capital of California. Before we get into just kind of an off-season catch-up, we've been out for a while dealing with business stuff, dealing with some personal stuff. And now we're back. We're locked in and we're ready to get our arms around whatever the hell is going on with the 49ers this offseason, including some positive vibes. But we have to start with the Brandon Ayuk stuff first. Before we get to that, a big shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops, sglambchops.com. That's the website. Use promo code Candlestick20 when you check out to receive 20% off your order today. Join the herd. And a big shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. All right. Candlestick Chronicles is back. Here we go. So happy to be back. Really fired up to be on the Odyssey Podcast Network. Hey, how about that Brandon Ayuk guy, huh?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just want to say it's great to be with Odyssey now. And it's just, you know, as anybody who works for a living knows, sometimes you just decisions need to be made. And I think it was mutual to you know, leave from our former shop, and priorities change, and there's absolutely no ill will, and we very much appreciate everybody over at Blue Wire for all the work, really going back what 6 years
we were Brother, more we were than that
6-7 years we were at Blue Wire
eight years ago
so we've been podcasting for a long time. So shout out to everybody at Blue Wire, shout out to Kevin, shout out to Tyler. Shout out to Ty. Everybody over there was great to work with the whole time. And, you know, I think what worked for them in terms of their model that changed, and our model needed to change a little bit. And so it made sense to move over to Odyssey. Plus, you work at an Odyssey radio station in Sacramento, which gives us some opportunities potentially to do some things. So that's, I guess, all we'll really discuss when it comes to that stuff. But just to be up front, people, you know, people are going to be like, why was there this long break? There was, you know, personal family stuff. There's a new member of the household over here, which I'm sure some people have heard about. So, you know, just a lot going on, busy off season from a business and personal standpoint, but excited to be back podcasting regularly. Oh, yeah. With you, Kyle. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, man. Same. I feel like I haven't seen you really at all in a long time, but now seeing you virtually again, really, really warms my heart. I love looking at you through a screen. So, let's get into some stuff that we missed. We're not going to go through. So we haven't podcasted in about a month. We didn't do a schedule podcast. Is kind of the last major thing that we missed. I don't really, unless you have super strong feelings you want to rehash about the schedule from a month ago, I think we can.
No, not really. Okay. I think the only thing I would mention, I would reiterate that I think the trip to Australia is ridiculous.
It's so stupid.
But I do
shout out
think
to our Australian friends though.
Shout out to our Australian friends. I'm sure there's, you know, they're excited to see 49er and Ram football in person. I think that'll be fun for them. But I think just in terms of the logistics of an NFL team flying basically halfway around the world to a different hemisphere to play one football game is, you know, it is what it is. But I think the 49ers benefit pretty significantly from having three straight home games coming off of that. So I think that, I don't want to say it balances it out, but I think it's about as good of a balancing act as the NFL could have done for them. I saw some consternation that the Rams benefited massively from getting the Monday night game following that trip. I would say that, you know, only one team could get that Monday night game. The Niners and Rams couldn't play on consecutive weeks.
Well, they could.
So, I guess they could. I just, you know, to point out that it's unfair that the Rams have the Monday night game while the Niners don't, although the Niners get three straight home games after the fact. I don't know. I thought that was a funny argument that some were making.
And the Rams go to like Denver and then Philly in back-to-back weeks after that.
Yeah, I would say the 49ers, given that they play Miami and Arizona, I think two teams with, what, 4.5 over-unders, 4.5 win over-unders going into the season?
Something like that.
I think it's a pretty advantageous break for the Niners coming off the Australia trip to get those teams. So I don't have any big thoughts. I do think like the last third of the schedule, like the final six or seven games, mm-hmm. I love it's like bangers only, man. Like it feels like every single
game,
high profile matchups, a lot of great quarterbacks. I love that. I love that about a schedule, particularly because last year felt like the schedule was lacking. Like there was, and it was a huge reason why the 49ers went to the playoffs, and Kyle Shanahan has said as much. But last year's schedule just wasn't that entertaining from just a pure, you know, fan of football perspective. It was just like seeing the Falcons, seeing the Panthers, like that wasn't the Saints early in the season. Like that wasn't the best. So getting the NFC or the AFC West and the NFC East, a lot of high profile teams, a lot of great quarterbacks. I think ultimately that's what you want, is your favorite team playing in a ton of high profile games against quality opponents. And that's what the 49ers get. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I've been trying to get this joke off, and it's going to sound a little bit dated based on our conversation here, but I'm going to keep saying it. I said, shout out to our Australian friends. Actually, to hell with our Australian friends until Saturday, our time, because it's the U.S. men's national team against the Socceroos on June 19th. And until June 20th, the country of Australia is my sworn enemy. So the Socceroos look great, though, in their opener against Turkey. A nice little 2-0 win for them. So
there's a chance if the U.S. wins its group, which it was favored to do coming into the World Cup. And I would imagine it still is after beating the brakes off Paraguay.
That was crazy.
That they would play in Levi's Stadium on July 1st in the knockout round if they win their group. So fingers crossed that that happens. I'm covering all of the World Cup games at Levi's. And I went to Qatar versus Switzerland over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And honestly, cool scene. I had like really low expectations. I was telling you before we started recording, like I was kind of worried it was going to look like a 49ers preseason game. I was like, I can't imagine like there's going to be a huge Qatari fan base coming to the Bay Area, and it's going to be like 85 degrees, which feels like 105 at Levi's in the sun. Mm-hmm. And it was packed. It was, I think, just like less than 1,000 below capacity. It was like 67,000 people. And it wasn't like there weren't empty seats. There were like after halftime and stuff, and you know, people stay in the air conditioned areas and the shade and all that for a minute. But like, I thought the atmosphere was awesome. I thought the attendance was really cool. And I thought just the vibes in the scene and the atmosphere was really, really cool. So I think, you know, we'll see when we have what Jordan and Algeria on Tuesday. But I think Levi's Stadium is
Stadium.
Sorry. It's stadium. All the signs say stadium. It's technically known as San Francisco Bay Area Stadium, which is, which is awesome. I'm sure the people in Santa Clara are thrilled that Santa Clara can't even be in the name of the San Francisco Bay Area Stadium.
Sure.
But no, I think Levi's is turning out to be a really cool venue for the World Cup, and people are showing out. And I think that's true all over the country for the World Cup. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. I'm having a great time. Love the World Cup. If the U.S. men's national team makes it to the second round, I will be in England for that and up at all hours of the night to tap in / morning. I can't.
Yeah, wait. I think it'll be closer to the morning.
I am the most casual U.S. men's national team fan in the world. And I have a great time every 4 years, except for when they weren't in it a few years ago.
I think it's what, 8 hours?
8 or 9.
Yeah, 8 or 9. So that'll be 1 or 2 in the morning, I think. In the
UK. Yeah, it'll be fine. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm gonna be dialed. I'm gonna find a pub, and we're gonna go have a great time.
Yeah, go get. Do they do iced coffees in the UK?
No, they don't. It's really hard to. It's so fucking hard to find an iced coffee in the UK. It is so difficult.
Well, is it hard to find ice cubes?
No, I don't think it's hard to find ice cubes.
You could probably get some ice cubes and then just pour a hot coffee into a cup with some ice in it, and then you'll have a nice coffee.
But honestly, the weather there most of the time, like, you want a hot coffee anyway. So
sure.
I just kind of deal with it. It's just I like, you know, when in Rome or whatever.
Yeah.
I've got to find an American soccer bar. You know how here they have like English soccer bars? I wonder if there's American soccer bars.
I'm sure there is.
Or they just serve broke ass hot dogs and Budweiser.
Right. Some cheeseburgers. Yeah, there's got to be some expats. If you're an expat in the UK and you you know of an American soccer bar for Kyle, hit him up on Twitter.
Please let me know. Very specifically on the Isle of Wight, if you can, you can pull that up, that'd be gas. All right, 49ers. That's why people are here. I think there's a couple things I want to get to, but I think it's impossible to talk about the 49ers right now and kind of try and recap some of the offseason stuff we've missed without starting with Brandon Ayuk. Because what the hell, man? What a bizarre, an already strange situation just seems to be getting continually more bizarre as it looks more and more like he's trying to force his way out of San Francisco via social media.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I don't think the 49ers really care about what he posts on social media. I don't think they're going to say, oh man, do you guys see Brandon Ayuk's Instagram story? We really got to cut him now. Like, I don't think that's, sure, that's in John Lynch's calculus. I think
what name did he call us?
Yeah. Like, if you haven't been paying attention to Brandon Ayuk on Instagram, he's calling the 49ers dumb and stupid and acting like little boys and using other choice language. And it's all kind of like, without knowing the real intricacies of the relationship, it all kind of seems like a cell phone, like Brandon Ayuk talking publicly about how stupid the 49ers are for paying him is like, they paid you, man. Like, like, you're the guy that they paid. You're saying they made a mistake by paying you. Like, that, I don't know that he understands that that comes across as like a really kind of silly thing to say. And like, because Brandon Ayuk didn't show up to work, he lost like more than $70 million on the potential of that 4-year, $120 million contract. He got, give or take, $48 million in cash coming out of that deal before the 49ers voided his guarantees for not showing up to work last summer. So the other side of it too is like, if you're another team, do you look at what Brandon Ayuk's doing and do you say, yeah, can't wait to get that guy in the building? Like, because if the relationship with the head coach or the new offensive coordinator or whoever sours, mm-hmm, are you going to have any confidence that Brandon Ayuk isn't just going to go on some weird social media tirade and have, mm-hmm, it be this like weird news story? That's like, what is happening? So I just don't think Brandon Ayuk is doing himself any favors, and I don't think he's putting any actual pressure on the 49ers. I think they're just going to sit on him, like being on the roster until he shows up. And once he shows up and then he's actually due money, then they're, mm-hmm, just going to cut him. But then he can get what he wants. But if he doesn't show up, then the 49ers retain his rights. They can fine him $50,000 per day that he's not there. And they don't have to trade him because he's not on the active roster and he's not going to count towards the salary cap. So Brandon Ayuk doesn't really have any leverage here. And he's just spouting off on social media, which is fine. Like, that's his prerogative. I just don't think he's helping himself in any way. And he's not endearing himself to his next destination, in my opinion.
When the 49ers start OTAs? April 10th? 11th?
Right around the draft, yeah.
Whatever it was?
Yeah. Before the draft.
I don't understand why Brandon Ayuk wasn't there day one. And not to try and mend the relationship, it has nothing to do with that. But like you just laid out, that's the only way you're forcing the 49ers' hand. And I've seen people say they might as well just get rid of him at this point. I think they're being petty, like on purpose. I don't think there's any, you'll hear sometimes like, we're going to do right by this guy. We're going to get him a place he wants to go. You know, there's no hard feelings, da, 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 da. And the team just releases a player and lets him go on his merry way. I don't think the 49ers want to do that. Less because they think, oh, we can get a seventh round pick swap for him. I don't think it might have something to do with that, but I think it's more, hey, we really have no desire to help him out. So we're going to hang on to him. And if Washington wants him, cool. We'll take a pick for him. Take a pick swap for him, whatever it is, but we'll get something for him. And in the meantime, he can just sit there and post on Instagram.
Because and if he wants to go to Washington, all he has to do is show up, force the 49ers to cut him, which they absolutely would, and then he could sign with Washington. And maybe that's what's going to happen, and all this is just sort of weird drama that's unnecessary. But either way, I don't see anybody in power in a position of power in the NFL looking at Brandon Ayuk's Instagram and being like, yep, that's the way you handle this. There's nobody who's doing that.
On top of the fact that this isn't just this offseason, right? It's not like he had a good year and the relationship soured. And like, no, people still have questions about his knee. And the 49ers reached a point where they waived his guarantees and then he didn't want him back. And I'm not totally sure he still has an agent just based on the fact that there's nobody telling him not to do this.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's been no counter reporting to all the stuff coming out about what happened with the 49ers, it's just a weird situation. So there's that on top of the new social media posts, some of which have been deleted, on top of, hey, we don't know how he's going to be with his knee. It's a really precarious spot for any team that's adding him. Now, he's really good. He's awesome when he's been good in the NFL. So I think you're going to see a team take a flyer on him. But at the same time, I get why Washington's not eager to trade for him. And I also understand why the 49ers aren't eager to just cut him.
Well, when you trade for him, you're also taking on the contract. And I forget off the top of my head what the guaranteed money is on the contract. But it's a lot more than he's probably worth right now. Like Brandon Ayuk in this current situation, if he's a free agent, is probably signing for $5 million. Like
I was three with incentives up to five.
Right. Like he's not, it's not like Brandon Ayuk's going to go get $30 million a year as a free agent if and when he gets to that point. So that's the thing, too, is if you're a team, you're saying, why would I trade for this guy and have to pay him what's on his current contract, which is going to be a lot more than what I would sign him for because there's no demand for him because he's basically tanked his own market.
Right.
So I just think it's unfortunate. And the other thing, too, is like you see like this kind of this happens to every team, right? Like there's always a disgruntled player. And I think people look at the fact that Brandon Ayuk is happening with Brandon Ayuk, and it's a huge indictment on the 49ers. And like, sure, I guess you can make that case. But I would also say there are a lot of really respected veterans who like have nothing but good things to say about the 49ers, like the culture and what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have built there. And like guys with a lot of equity in the league, like future Hall of Famers, like Richard Sherman and Trent Williams and George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey and Nick Bosa. And like, there are people who, you know, and all these
Debo
guys,
Samuel.
Sure. Debo like was at odds with certain things, but like the Niners culture, like Brandon Ayuk does not define the Niners culture or lack thereof. Like the fact that, and it's particularly funny because a team with bad culture wouldn't suffer all the injuries the 49ers dealt with last year and then go as far as they did in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right. Like that stuff is like almost entirely like they had talent for sure, but they were also missing a ton of talent with injuries. But culture is a reason why seasons like last year can happen. And so to look at this Brandon Ayuk situation and be like, yeah, 49ers are like such a horribly run outfit right now because of this Brandon Ayuk situation. I'll just say, man, I've seen a whole bunch of like really high quality NFL players who've been in the league for a long time and would say the opposite. And so I don't know. To me, I think like it's goes back to like the most cliche thing. Everyone's mind blowing this. Like, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Like, just quiet, I think would do him a lot more good than saying all these wild things on social media, because I don't think other teams are out there being like, yeah, let me get a hold of this guy, because this really seems like a crazy way to go about handling your business.
Yeah, man. You talk about respected veterans on the team, and how they view the 49ers culture. Here's what Mike Evans, a future Hall of Famer, said about signing with the 49ers for less money than the Buccaneers, his longtime team, offered him this offseason. He was talking to Fred Warner, and when he talked about why he chose San Francisco, he told Warner, quote, "You're part of the reason, seriously. Obviously, we've known each other before, but I've admired your game and a lot of your teammates' game and y'all's culture and the stadium and the way it feels to play there, and it just made sense for me to go out there and finish my career strong in San Francisco." I think that, to me, just from a guy who played against the 49ers a few times, to mention the culture and making that a big reason why he signed there, a player like Mike Evans, I think it's a really big deal. And I think it that to me means more about where the 49ers stand locker room wise than whatever crash out Brandon Ayuk is having.
Agreed. So I don't know. My expectation is Brandon Ayuk will show up at some point in training camp, probably on report day, just, you know, before the media are even there. And then he'll walk in the building. The Niners will tell him to leave. They'll formally release him, and then he'll go sign with Washington or wherever else. That's my expectation. And if he doesn't show up to the Niners, there's a real chance that Brandon Ayuk is just never playing football again. Because if he is unwilling to just show up to the 49ers, force their hand and force them to cut him, then they can just sit on his rights. And yeah, it would be screwed up, but like it's not really their prerogative to do Brandon Ayuk any favors for taking $48 million after signing that contract and playing 7 games and then just not showing up for work and then bad-mouthing them on social media.
I'm not even sure he would have to physically show up to the facility. I think if he told them, hey, FYI, I just landed in San Jose, I'll be at the facility today, they would go, no thanks, we'll just release you.
Yeah.
Like FaceTime them from SJC. That's the San Jose airport. FaceTime them from there and be like, hey, I'm here. All right, see ya.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
You want to talk about our friends at Lamb Chops real quick?
Boy, do I.
Let's get the vibes back up. Let's talk about Lamb Chops instead of Brandon Ayuk. You want to talk about this sick-ass new mechanics jacket?
Yeah, I need to get this one. I have the blue one from a couple years ago, and I really need this black and gray one. Shout out to Jordan and Craig over at Lamb Chops out of Minneapolis. SGLambChops.com is the website. Spring line's out now. I'd imagine the summer line has got to be out soon. Just everything they make is great. It's just like my favorite clothing brand. I'm wearing shorts right now from Lamb Chops. I have so many pairs of Lamb Chops shorts, and boy, do they get me through these hot days in Sacramento. It is, it's really, really a blessing to have like 10 pairs of Lamb Chops mesh shorts and some sweat shorts, which are also incredibly clutch around the house, traveling, running errands, everything. So shout out to Lamb Chops. Make sure you throw in Candlestick in the search bar, as I am doing right now.
Yeah, watch.
And you will get t-shirts,
hey,
hoodies, Candlestick Chronicles merch. And it's great stuff. And there may or may not be more on the way. We will let you know closer to the season, or at least at some point here in the not-too-distant future.
We'll let you know closer when we know it's coming out.
SGLambChops.com, promo code Candlestick20. Lamb Chops, join the herd.
Hell yeah. So we're talking before the program, as we are wont to do, and you said that you feel like this offseason there's positive vibes for the 49ers. And I would like you to explain that.
Yeah, I think free agency in getting Mike Evans and in getting Osa Digizua in the trade with the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
I think the vibes are good from the standpoint of you look at the roster and sure, might they have drafted Deshaun Stribling 10 spots too early? I guess. Is that going to change the way they feel about their draft class or their offseason haul as a whole? I don't think so. And I think the fact that Kyle Shanahan was willing, and I know there are logistical reasons involving the World Cup, being at Levi's Stadium, the 49ers basically using Levi's Stadium, or it is like their locker room is in Levi's Stadium when they're practicing. Like their locker room is their locker room for games and practices. It's not a separate facility. But canceling the mandatory OTAs because you have all of your veterans in the building and everyone's participating, I think to me is just a good sign that Kyle Shanahan's like pretty content. Like coaches love practice. You know, like nobody loves practice more than coaches. And for Kyle Shanahan to be like, yeah, we're good. We don't need this. It used to be 3 days. Then it was two. A couple years, it's been one. And now Kyle Shanahan's just like, nope, we don't even need mandatory OTAs anymore. I think is an indication that they like where they're at. The work's been good in the spring. Attendance has been good. George Kittle is trending towards playing, if not week one, at some point early in the season, which was a huge question mark after he suffered the Achilles injury.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Bosa is probably going to be back at some point early in the season, if not for week one. And we'll see about Mykal Williams. But to me, I just think like this is a veteran group. It's still a really talented team. I think Raheem Morris is a really good defensive coordinator potentially. I think the additions they made to the defensive line as a whole, even outside of Osa Digizua, I think the young guys in year two and the rookies that they added along the defensive line could be productive for them. So I'm just like, I'm in on where the 49ers are at right now, just from a vibes positivity perspective going into the season. Like this doesn't feel like they got the Trent Williams deal done, right? Like there
right.
isn't,
but yes.
There isn't this weird looming contract stuff like, oh, is this guy going to be there for the start of training camp? And maybe something pops up. It's June 15th and some of the stuff will pop up maybe in July or whatever. Mm. But for right now, it doesn't seem like any of that stuff is coming. And it seems like the 49ers are in a pretty good place, at least as far as June 15th goes, because, you know, that can obviously change. But I feel like the vibes are good in Santa Clara and the 49ers are in a good spot going into the season.
Yeah, for me, it's going to come down to, I don't really disagree. I think for me, the looming specter of health is always so prevalent here.
Yeah.
Where like the George Kittle stuff is great right now, but that changes if, hey, they just wrapped up the preseason and George Kittle's still on the PUP list. And actually they're going to keep him there to start the year. So he's going to miss the first 4 weeks. Now all of a sudden that becomes a massive concern, right? After if it goes from, oh, he's going to be back week one. And if he's not really, really quickly after that, because it's the flight to Australia, if it goes immediately to he's getting no training camp and then he's going to miss the first 4 weeks. Or if Nick Bosa comes back and isn't quite the same, or if Mykal Williams isn't going to be ready for week one. There's a lot of things that to me could really quickly derail the positive vibes. And that's without like, that's just the guys who are back. Like I'm not concerned yet about injuries that haven't happened in training camp, but that's the big thing for me is the Mike Evans signing was great. The more I've thought about it and watched, the more I'm in on Deshaun Stribling. Fred Warner is fully healthy, ready to go. I think I agree with you a lot as far as the additions up front. I think improving the pass rush will improve the secondary in a pretty dramatic way because that unit struggled a lot last year. Dre Greenlaw being back is great for the vibes. If he's on the field for more than 7 or 8 games. So I get it a lot for sure. I just need to for me, like, I've got to see it before I really start buying in.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I think the Mike Evans thing, I don't want to say it like transforms the offense, but I think it is an injection of something different that I think could be helpful, because he's not the type of receiver that, you know, Kyle Shanahan has typically brought in. And I think the ways that he can win, particularly in the red zone and in crucial third downs, and with the way he could potentially complement Brock Purdy with his receiving style, I think that could be transformative to the offense. And I think it could also, if they have to deal with any prolonged absence from George Kittle, I think it could help make up for that. Because the way, you know, the way they use George Kittle in the red zone, I think could be very similar to how Mike Evans ends up getting used, just in terms of the type of routes he runs, the ability to win in contested areas. Like, I think that's how he could really help the 49ers offense. So overall, I think they've insulated themselves from some of that stuff. But we'll see. And you know, like, I don't hate the idea of Jake Tonjes getting a lot of run. I really don't. I don't think Jake Tonjes is a bad player.
12 personnel this year. It's going to be... If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you'll know that every offseason, if you told me it's been every single offseason, I would believe you that I've been like, this is the year they're going to run more multi-tight end stuff. This is the one.
If this were a Rams podcast, you'd be looking brilliant right now.
I'd be a pig and you know what. I think Mike Evans is going to get like 130 targets this year.
Yeah, if he's healthy, which is obviously
the question. I think Brock Purdy is going to throw him the ball a lot.
But
rightfully so. Yes, that's the right thing to do if you're Brock Purdy. Because I think there's this image of Mike Evans, because like the classic, if I say close your eyes and imagine a Mike Evans play, it's just that nine route, right? It's just that go and him winning a contested catch down the field. But so much of what Mike Evans does is like boxing out defenders and being available in the middle of the field and making tough catches. It's more than just that go route. And I think that's going to be just a major, major piece. Like a lot of it's second and eight and there's Mike Evans for 9 yards right at the sticks. I think is going to be an upgraded version of what we saw with Juwan Jennings.
Yeah. Bear with me on this take, because this just popped into my head. And
it's June 15th. Takes don't matter right now.
I might still be workshopping it.
They don't count.
You know how, like, talking about Mike Evans and the way he compliments Brock Purdy, and you bringing up the nine route brought up something interesting into my head. It might be that Mike Evans is the perfect type of receiver to catch deep balls from Brock Purdy, because Brock Purdy doesn't have the type of arm where it's like, I'm just going to throw it 70 yards and I need like a 4-3 guy to just go run it down. Like when Brock Purdy is throwing deep balls, he has enough arm, but he's certainly not, I wouldn't say he's like plus arm guy, but he can locate deep balls generally pretty well. And like Mike Evans isn't going to win with speed. He's just going to win with physicality and his ability to win at the catch point. With how accurate I think Brock Purdy can be on those deep balls, I think Mike Evans might be the perfect type of receiver to be on the other side of those, because he's not like Brock is not, like I said, the throw it 70 yards guy and like Tyreek Hill go chase it down. It's like, I'm going to throw it 40 yards downfield, but I need my guy to go beat the corner for it.
Right.
And not necessarily use his speed, because Brock Purdy doesn't have that gigantic arm that you associate with some guys who are really good at throwing deep balls. Does that make sense?
Yeah, dude. And just to drive this point home, Brock Purdy last season completed 52.9% of his deep throws. That's 20 plus yards downfield. The year before that, he was 42.9. The year before that, he was 57.9. And in his rookie year, he was 40.7. And we've talked about this before, but the the measurement on a what's a good completion percentage on deep throws like that, you view it like a 3-point percentage. And the elite 3-point shooters in the NBA shoot between like 38 and 40%. And some tick up a little higher. So for his lowest number to be 40% and then to be over 50% twice on deep balls is crazy. Like the frequency isn't going to be there like it might be with a Josh Allen, right? Or a Matthew Stafford, like somebody with a huge arm that can just create plays down the field like that. But when he does uncork it, it's usually in the vicinity of his receiver. And I think Mike Evans is going to win a lot of those, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what that looks like, particularly if George Kittle is going to miss time. I think everything you brought up regarding George Kittle and like, is he, you know, when does he participate in training camp? That stuff is definitely concerning, but just the fact that that's even a conversation, I think overall is a positive because
no doubt
a lot of times like an Achilles tear in January, you're like, is he even going to play by November? But just the fact that it's like, September is like in the cards. Like I think, or at least a possibility, I think that's pretty overwhelmingly positive considering the nature of Achilles tears.
Yeah, well, and when he went down, and I mean, you're absolutely right. One of the things I wasn't the only one, but when he went down, it was like, hey, he's gone all of next season.
Right.
He tore his Achilles in the wild card round. He's gone for next year. But then the nature of the injury and the location of it and modern medicine, it you're right. The fact he's even right now on track to be back in September is a massive W. And if it is week five, a huge, huge W for sure.
That's right. Fair. And I would probably just because George, like in turn, if you're going to make if you're going to talk about players that like really need training camp versus ones that don't, I would argue George Kittle probably doesn't need a ton of work in training camp to get ready for the season.
Right.
So I think I'm going to end up making the case at some point in August, like no, keep George Kittle on ice till October. And let him like be a little bit more healthy so he can be ready for, you know, November, December, January, potentially.
Let Jake Tungus cook.
Bro,
I'm so with you. I'm here for this.
I am optimistic about Jake Tungus, the number one tight end. I don't think he's a Pro Bowler or anything, but like, oh, Jake Tungus had 6 catches for 80 yards and a game-winning touchdown? Like, would that surprise
you?
That
was just week one last year.
Right.
I think that's literally what happened in week one last year.
Right.
It wasn't like, 6 for 80, but
I think he can play a little bit. Now, obviously, he's not George Kittle in the running game, but like,
yet.
But I think he might be a pretty interesting pass catcher potentially. I think he has that potential.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. I'm trying to not get over my skis with Jake Tungus. Jake Tungus, by the way, against Chicago, 7 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown in week 17 last year. Then you have it in the loss to Tampa Bay, 6 for 58. The week before that, overtime win in LA with no wide receivers, 7 for 41 and a touchdown. Week before that, in a loss to Jacksonville, 3 for 58 and a touchdown. Jake Tungus can hoop.
How many touchdowns did he score last year?
5. 5 tugs.
It's not bad, man.
You want to know what he did against Seattle in week 18?
I'm guessing it was like a goose egg.
Yeah, nothing. didn't have a stat. No I think, stats.
I don't think.
Didn't play an offensive snap.
Yeah, I remember.
6 catches,
I think,
for 73 yards in 2 playoff games, though.
Yeah, I remember George Kittle, I think, played in every snap of that Seahawks game. I think.
That makes sense. Would make sense for
you. Question for you before we get out of here. Where do you stand on the apparent willingness of Kyle Shanahan to not play Christian McCaffrey 100% of the snaps this year?
In the exact same place I stand on thinking the 49ers are going to run more 12 personnel this year. It's the exact same. My favorite thing about that is Kyle Shanahan, he said this multiple times. He says this every offseason. And it more or less comes down to like, yeah, offense is harder when Christian McCaffrey's not on the field, so we just don't take him off. What? Like, brother, that's on you to figure out. Don't run him into the ground like that. Well, yeah, we can talk about offseason questions on another podcast, but spoiler alert, that's one for me.
Yeah.
Christian McCaffrey has led the league in touches twice in his career. Three times, including last year. And the previous two times, I think he played a combined seven games the following seasons.
Is there a more, and I'm not trying to say training camp pressure is an actual thing that like really matters, but just from a pure, like we're going to be paying attention to training camp. Is there anybody with more pressure on them than Kalen Black?
It's a great question.
In training camp, just like training camp only.
No. I was going to try and curveball my way into a Ricky Pearsall answer here, but that's not, it's not, it's Kalen Black, dude.
Yeah.
1,000%. Because I think Kalen Black has two options. I think Kalen Black has running back two who plays some downs or healthy scratch. I think those are his two options.
Yeah. Like if Kalen Black is only active because it's like, oh man, just great personal protector on punt coverage.
He is a demon on special teams.
Like I don't think that's a win for the third round running back you drafted, despite everybody hating the pick.
Be so good for our Brant Boyer assistant GM bit.
Yeah, they didn't draft him in the third round because Kyle Shanahan thought he could really be the number two running back behind Christian McCaffrey. They drafted him because of what he does on kickoffs. Because
Brant Boyer stood on the table for him.
He just blasts through wedge blocks and is just, you're not getting it past the 25 with Kalen Black on the field on kickoff, let me tell you.
Kyle, you guys drafted another running back early. And he's like, did we? I didn't think about other. I didn't know that we even did that. That's like, shut up. You knew you did. But can you imagine if he's just like, yeah, you guys think we drafted him too early? Cut on that 2021 JMU special teams tape and get back to me.
It would be really funny if he was like, remember how Raheem Mostert was like an incredible gunner on punt coverage? And that's like how Raheem Mostert like first got his snaps before he became like a really good running back.
We think it could be a lot like Raheem as a runner. No,
I think that would be the funniest scenario for Kalen Black, would just be like, this dude is just an incredible special teams player and is just like a Pro Bowl special teamer as a rookie. And yet everyone hates the pick because he was a third round running back and he's not getting any carries. I think that would be just like the most funny outcome.
I wanted to check on something real quick. Okay. This is huge. This is really, really big. By the time Raheem Mostert got to the 49ers, he was 24 years old, which is the exact age Kalen Black is right now. Although, tough scene for our guy Kalen that he turns 25 in October.
Dude, it's funny how old the draft class is.
Legitimately.
I think if you really, like, even more so than like, oh, they reach for these guys, whatever. I think a bigger critique of the draft class is just like how old everyone is. Like all these dudes,
I would agree.
Like Mykel Williams is like 3 years younger than like everyone they just drafted.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts.
So I think, or maybe that means they'll contribute sooner, but it also could mean that these guys are like maxed out and might not develop into much more than they already are.
Armo's ball 8 didn't even break out until his age 27 or his age 27 season. So yeah. Kalen Black's got a couple of years. He's got some time.
Yeah. I hated the pick like everyone else did. But man, watching Kalen Black, I didn't hate the tape. Didn't hate it.
Just the way he breaks down in front of the kick returner.
the angles he takes on kickoffs, just like his ability to keep his eyes up and beat the block and go make the play.
Sees what he's hitting.
Just the ability to avoid the block and maintain the angle.
Guy is hat on a hat personified.
God, that would be so funny. I'm rooting for it now. Kalen Black, just like teams demon.
Who is the dude on the Bills? Steve Tasker?
No idea.
Is that his name? I think he passed away recently. RIP.
Oh God. RIP. Not only did you bring up somebody I don't know, you he might not be around anymore.
Oh no, he's definitely still with us. Okay. That's my bad, Steve. I just killed Steve Tasker. That's a tough scene for me. Man. Yeah, the Taskman, Steve Tasker. He was a Pro Bowler as a special teamer for the Buffalo Bills for six consecutive seasons from 1990 to 1995, and in that stretch, he caught a grand total of 28 passes as a receiver. Like Caleb Black, path has been paved.
What's his name? Slater. What's his first name? Slater for the Patriots, who was like a long time.
Matthew.
Yeah, Matthew Slater. He was a receiver, but I don't think he ever caught passes, but he was always just like a special teams guy. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a question, and we'll get out of here on that.
If Kalen Black, okay, sorry.
Oh, sure. If Kalen Black has a Matthew Slater career where he's like culture guy, like regular special teams all pro, but like never does anything on offense, will he have been a good draft pick in the third round?
Do the 49ers win a title during his career?
Sure. Yes.
Then yes.
Okay.
He'll become a fan favorite. But if he's on the team while they win 10 or 11 games this year and they're out in the first or second round, and they never really get over the hump and he doesn't get a second contract, then no, it's a disaster.
Sure. Yeah, I mean,
even if he's a four-time special teams All-Pro. Does he get a second contract if he's a four-time special teams All-Pro, though? He does. He will.
Yeah, for sure. All right. For sure.
That's the guy who gets a second contract. That's their first draft pick to get a second contract in a million years. It's because he's awesome on special teams. If he does that, if that his career arc, which would be awesome, he'd make a lot of money and would be in the league for a long time. I'm changing his nickname to Third Phase. Okay. In fact, I might call him that now. You see Third Phase out there?
If the 49ers season, like I'm mostly indifferent.
Call him about Fourth and Kalen because he's only on the field on fourth down.
I don't care about where guys are drafted so much as other people. I'm more like, does this guy help you or not? And that's how I kind of value the draft pick. Mm-hmm. But if like Christian McCaffrey leaves a playoff game with an injury or whatever, and Kalen Black can't come in and be like productive for you, that's ultimately how you define a third round running back when you have Christian McCaffrey, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If it's like, screwed, lost Christian McCaffrey, we can't run the ball at all now with Kalen Black, this guy we drafted in the third round, then it's like, all right, well, that kind of says it all.
I don't want to rehash this. It's just tough when picking a running back in the third round is a tough scene for your fourth round running back from 2 years ago and your fifth round running back from last year. God. All right, man.
Not out on Jordan.
We'll get it right eventually. The 49ers apparently are.
See. Anyway, we'll have plenty of time to talk about the 49ers.
Unless he's RB2 because Kalen Black is just flying around all third phase out there.
That would be so funny.
Kind of need it.
All right. Subscribe, rate, and review. Shout out to everyone at Odyssey for the warm welcome. And we will talk to you guys later on. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Candlestick Chronicles Podcast on YouTube. And we'll have probably more social channels at some point. Maybe. Stand by for that. And we will talk to you guys soon.
Yeah. Shout out our Oker.